Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
That's our regimental slogan. Go for broke. It's pidgin English for shoot the works. Pull up a chair, Lieutenant. I'll be with you in a minute. Tell me, sir, do you use live ammunition in the rifle range?
The Jap's a Jap, eh?
All I know is they were put under armed guard in relocation centers last year. Maybe the Army just had some surplus barbed wire they wanted to use up. Was that it?
The Army was facing an emergency at the start of the war, a possible invasion by Japanese troops. So all Japanese Americans were evacuated from the West Coast. There was no loyalty check, no screening, nothing. If there were any spies among them, I can assure you they're not in the 442.
In the 1951 movie Go for Broke, Van Johnson plays a lieutenant in World War II who had reservations about the men who had been placed under his command. The 442nd Regimental Combat Team, made up almost entirely of Japanese American citizens. Some from Hawaii had witnessed the Pearl Harbor attack. Others from the mainland had been forcibly removed from their families and their homes and placed in wartime internment camps without due process, surrounded by barbed wire and machine gun carrying guards. The new fighting regiment would also meet prejudice from those who couldn't distinguish between Imperial Japan and patriotic Japanese American citizens. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51 in a special Veterans Week program, we have as our special guests two of the men who fought in the now legendary 442nd, which became the most decorated unit of the war. 92-year-old Robert Izumi was raised in Southern California. He spent 2 years in the Manzanar internment camp, and he would later serve in the 101st Airborne Division in World War II. Then, as a staff sergeant in the Korean War and a recipient of the Bronze Star in Vietnam. 92-year-old Robert Liano grew up in a family of farm laborers in California. He was sent to the internment camp in Gila, Arizona. He later fought in Italy and France and received the Congressional Gold Medal in 2011. Robert Izumi and Robert Liano are in central Wisconsin thanks to the Walk in Their Shoes School History Program, and they're here to take your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. That phone number again is 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Robert Izumi and Bob Liano, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And we should mention that if you would like to see these gentlemen in person, they are going to have a couple of appearances that are open to the public. Let me make sure that I get this right. They're going to be appearing Thursday night, that's tonight, in the Edgar High School Auditorium at 6:30, and then tomorrow night, Friday night, in the Center for Civic Engagement Building here on the UW Marathon County campus in Wausau. Well, Bob Izumi and Robert Liano, it's been 65 years since that movie Go for Broke came out. Was it an accurate description of what you and the other Japanese-American soldiers went through? Bob, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I think it pretty much covered everything. It's pretty accurate, I think.
Robert, was it accurate?
Yes, sir.
How about that depiction of Lieutenant Michael Grayson? Was he a real character? Was there a Lieutenant Michael Grayson that you had to deal with?
It played it pretty good, I think. And that movie was all right. It was okay.
Did he have trouble relating to the Nisei troops after the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor?
I think they all had a problem at the beginning, you know. But I think in due time, they understand what we Buddha heads are like. And that's the way it is. I mean, at first, I know it was for some of the Caucasian officers, they had a little rough time, but I think in due time, they all adjusted. Didn't make no difference, even when you come to the food, you know.
Okay. With the food? Why?
Well, you know, we like Japanese, like rice, you know. And so it took them a little while to get that thing around where we were able to even get rice. But we went around and got rice on our own by bootlegging the the bread for rice, changing, you know, through the...
Oh, so you had a swap with people.
Swappers, that's it, right.
Robert Izumi, what was the real Lieutenant Michael Grayson like?
Well, I didn't know him personally, but I had a Lieutenant Milton Brown. I don't know if this gentleman to my left remembers him or not, but he couldn't pronounce the Japanese name. He can break it in syllables to pronounce the Japanese name, but he says, "Is there a no balls Izumi here?" And I stood up and I said, "I have balls." That's the truth. That is the truth.
Now, Bob Yano, you said we're all Buddha heads. Yeah. Tell me where that came from.
Well, I think that, you don't say Japanese. You just say Buddha heads. I guess maybe, I don't know where it really came from. Maybe because some people are Buddhist and, but it's just Buddha heads. We just became Buddha heads.
What I heard is that there were two groups of you. There was a group from Hawaii
right.
And another from
mainland.
Yeah. And the Buddha heads were from Hawaii, yeah. And you had...
We were Katonks.
Katonks. All right. So I understand Buddha heads. What is a Katonk?
Katonk is, I think, when they beat us up, we hit the pavement, we hit the floor... And when you hit, it katonk,
That was the sound of your heads hitting the floor.
That's how they got the word katonk. Maybe the Hawaiians beat us up a little bit, and when you hit the floor, you katonk.
So there was not only tension between you and the white officers, but also tension among your own ranks,
definitely.
Between the people from Hawaii and the people from California. Tell me about that.
Definitely. I think, really, if you think about it, it probably took Lieutenant Inouye, at that time, they went to Jerome, Arkansas, and they realized where we came from, all of us. We came from different relocation camps or concentration camps. So then they realized that, by golly, if we were in there, would we go and volunteer or serve?
Well, let me make sure I understand this right. You being from mainland California,
right. But we were,
you were put in the camps,
right.
But the people from Hawaii weren't.
No.
So the people from Hawaii came over, and they didn't understand your experience.
That's right. So when they made that trip to one of the camps, I think it was Jerome or someplace.
In Arkansas, right?
Arkansas.
So they took... The people from Hawaii to see one of these internment camps.
Yes, and Lieutenant Inouye was one of the main... He probably took the group there. Sure, they sang their way, sang on the bus. When they got there, then they realized that, hey, these guys come out of camp under those conditions. And then they realized that, would I have volunteered from those conditions underneath camp?
Maybe you were not as carefree and you weren't playing the ukuleles quite as much.
So when they returned to basic to Army life, they realized that, it just gave him a second thought,
Robert Izumi, what was your thought about the tension between the groups from Hawaii and the groups from California?
Well, our company didn't have no Hawaiians there, and we didn't have no intentions.
And so there were no tensions?
No.
Well, let's talk about something Franklin Roosevelt said. It was the president during World War II. In fact, the movie Gopher Broke starts with a statement by him. He said the proposal of the War Department to organize a combat team consisting of loyal American citizens of Japanese descent has my full approval. The principle on which this proposal was founded and by which it has always been governed is that Americanism is a matter of the mind and heart. Americanism is not and never will be a matter of race or ancestry. Robert, can you focus on those words?
No, I can't. In fact, when we were interned, all Japanese were C4s. I don't know if the nation know what C4 means. C4 is an alien.
That was your draft registration, right?
Yes.
And if you were 1A, you could serve, but if you were C4, you couldn't because your loyalty was suspect.
Right.
And how did you feel being a loyal Japanese-American citizen to have that loyalty questioned?
I didn't question it because I was at that time I was just a teenager going into service, and
Well, you didn't question it, but other people
did. Other did, yes.
And my question to both of you, well, Bob, why don't I let you reflect on Franklin Roosevelt's words?
I'm glad that you asked me because I was 18. I just turned 18, and I was a senior in high school. And you had to register for the draft when you were 18. I registered. And when I got a classification for the local board in Fresno, California, I was 1A, which that was okay. That's what I expected. But when they sent me to Gila, Arizona, the concentration camp, they reclassified me 4C. Well, that's enemy alien. That's just like my dad. But my dad had a card, but he had a green card, which better than me. I was an alien. So how do you think I felt?
Not very good, I imagine.
I felt like, I don't want to say in here, but it made me mad. So I didn't work in camp. I had a problem.
How do you feel about the fact that Americans, white Americans, questioned why you would want to fight for America against the nation of your family's long back ancestry, Imperial Japan?
Well, I don't know no connection with Japan. I have none. I'm an American. We were going to school for that. It's different probably if you're raised in Japan. I wasn't raised in Japan. I'm just like anybody else.
And why would you want to fight for America even though this country took you and your families and put you in those concentration camps during the war? Why fight for that country if they did that to you?
To prove that I'm a good American. What else can you do? I think all of us, that's where the Gopher Broke went, made history because we had to prove ourselves. And if you take the 100th Battalion, they were already in the Army before Pearl Harbor. And what did they do with them? They just took them and shipped them to Camp McCoy. That's completely separate. That's the 100th.
And that's here in Wisconsin. So there's
That's right.
Camp McCoy, so there Wisconsin. Is a Wisconsin connection
that's,
to your
that's
story.
Correct. And so they didn't even Eisenhower didn't want them. But finally, they shipped them over, and General Mark Clark took them. So he made it good soldiers, and they proved themselves. So that's when we came about, as 442 came on.
Robert Izumi, how did you feel about having that draft classification? There were people who were worried that you might support Imperial Japan more than you'd support the United States.
Well, I didn't figure that way because I had a brother that was in the service way before Pearl Harbor, and I followed his suit, and my dad always say, prove to you that good be a good soldier, which I did, and so all my brothers did.
And you were a really good soldier because you not only fought in World War II, but you went on to fight in Korea and Vietnam, and you finally retired in the 1970s.
Yes, I retired as a sergeant major, and I'd do it all over again if they let me.
After the Pearl Harbor attack, what was it like dealing with the racism against you and other Japanese American citizens, Robert?
I had nothing derogatory. The only time I had prejudice was when we stopped in Mojave for luncheon, and I got out. I was in my uniform, and I went in there, and the sign that says, no Japs allowed. So I made a 180 and went back into the bus, and the bus driver says, what are you back in here for? He says, they wouldn't serve me because I'm a Jap. And he said, well, you both fought in the war. You fought with the Japanese unit. I said, I did that, sir. And he said, I'll be right back. He went back in there, and he told the proprietor, he said, I will not stop my bus here anymore, which he didn't do that.
Bob, same question to you. What was it like facing the racism after the Pearl Harbor attack?
Well, in my experience, like I said, I was a senior. I think the real bad part was going back to school. And, people that you played football with, you played basketball with, some of the friends you associated in different classes, just kind of turned away. So, you know, it really hurts you, you know, when you think that they're your real friends, but something like that come up and you're out there by yourself. But one of the main things that I always thought that was wrong was the principal should have called everybody together, like some schools, and kind of explained the situation, which some of the school principals, they called the whole school in and explained the situation that we weren't responsible for anything. But in my school, they didn't do nothing. So I kind of had a little bad feeling toward the principal. Pierce, he was our principal, but
didn't they teach people in the classroom American history, the U.S. Constitution?
Well, that's another subject. See, when that history class came up, I had a teacher by the name of Mr. Dodson, and of course, Yano's. I'm by the door, you know. I'm alphabetically by the door.
Oh, yeah. So you were way in the back.
So I was way in the back, and I was already fuming from the days before. So I took the book, you know. With problems of democracy is a class. And, you know, democracy, with my feeling at that time, I took that book and I threw it all the way to the front of the door, and I closed the door and I left and I went home. I never went back to school no more. But the funny part of it is both of my kids went to school, same high school, Kingsburg High School, and that teacher asked each of my kids, my daughter, my son, "By the way, is your dad named Robert Yano?" And, of course, I guess they said yes, but they didn't know what happened. But so it was quite a feeling. But it did bother me. It did bother me, yeah.
Now, December 7th, 1941 is considered a day that will live in infamy.
Right.
The bombing of Pearl Harbor. Some say there's another day of infamy associated with the passage of Executive Order 9066, when President Roosevelt rounded up Japanese American citizens and forced them into those internment camps or concentration camps. Is it true that as many as 120,000 American citizens of Japanese descent were rounded up at that time?
I believe every one of them, yeah. I believe maybe more. I don't know, but I would say 120,000 anyway. And, you know, I think about it even now. When you take the people out, put them in concentration camp, did you ever stop to think that some of the fathers didn't show up when they had to ride the bus to go to the camp? Well, what happened is that they tell them to go back and check. And they go back to the house, the father commits suicide. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. There's a lot of cases like that because he's leaving his home. He lost everything. House, furniture, car, you know, you think about that.
Both of you spent time in those camps. Bob Yano, you were sent to the camp in the desert in Gila, Arizona.
Gila, Arizona.
And Bob Izumi, you spent 2 years in confinement at the Manzanar camp in California. What was that like?
Well, I was a teenager, so helped make the camouflage nets for the armed forces at that time. I didn't. And there was three of us that dug under the barbed wire and went up to the river and made a place where we can jump in and swim. But they never caught us.
Bobiana, what was that like?
You mean in camp?
Yeah, the camp in Gila, Arizona.
Well, I was still fuming when I went in camp. You know, I didn't work for a while. I just laid around with some of the others that had the same idea as me.
You know? But you had barbed wire. You had machine guns pointed at you.
You had a barbed wire and you had an MP. But when you look at the MP, he's probably rejected from the army because he looked like he was just ready to flop over. Well, really, I wouldn't even say he was a soldier. But they had a rifle way up on the tower, pointing down, watching so we wouldn't go through the fence. But maybe I shouldn't say it, but as time went on, you know, they're laxed up. They're just looking the other way.
Oh, they realized you weren't a threat.
Yeah, we were inside camp, but three of us decided, let's go out of camp. So one of the fellows backed out. There was two of us. Says, let's go out to Phoenix. So we went down the canal and went past the gate, and the MP is up there. Well, he was looking the other way anyway. We cased it out, and that's his habit, you know, just standing there looking around. So we went down the canal, got out to the road, and we hitched a ride. And people pick us up, you know. And we went into Phoenix, and we saw a movie for 25 cents. We came back the same way. That MP was probably another MP, but it wasn't that what you call really strict, you know. They're just doing their job, but...
So you left the camp, you escaped, and then you came back to the camp again.
Yeah, we went to the movie. We started out with three, but only two of us went, you know. So
These days, when you think of internment camps or concentration camps, you think of a couple of things. You think of the Nazi concentration camps that participated in the Jewish Holocaust.
Yeah.
And then we've got the American prison camp for suspected terrorists at Guantanamo.
Yeah.
How different and how similar were your camps to those camps?
Oh, no, ours aren't that bad. I mean, as far when you consider that, because the Nazi camps, you know, some of those are really bad because, you know, some of the 442 went in there after they...
When you were fighting in Europe, you had to help liberate one of those camps.
It was pretty much over on the Italy side, the final push on the other side. They took the artillery from the 442 regiment and sent them over there. And they came across that death camp over there. We have some pictures about that 442 unit over there. So they saw it. Some of the soldiers saw it. I didn't see it, but some of them did.
Do either of you worry at all that something like what you went through could happen in America again with people being rounded up and put into camps?
Do I think that they would?
Is it a possibility? Is it something you think about?
Sometimes I wonder, yeah, but... I don't think they will do it anymore. I don't think so. I really don't think so. Because I think we have a lot of people that realize what we went through. Maybe not. Maybe I'm just talking through my head, but I don't think so. I don't think if we had people that would understand what we went through, I don't think we would even went through camp because it just took just a moment.
Just a moment, and that was it.
That was it, yeah.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to a special Veterans Week edition of Route 51 with Robert Izumi and Robert Yano, two surviving members of the heroic 442nd Regimental Combat Team of World War II. You can see them both tonight. That's Thursday night in the Edgar High School Auditorium, and tomorrow night, Friday night, in the Center for Civic Engagement Building on the UW Marathon County campus in Wausau. Both appearances are thanks to A Walk in Their Shoes school history program. We're going to take a short break. First, here's the Andrews Sisters with a song for GIs in the 1940s.
They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The captain seemed to understand. Because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin Alumni Association, committed to preparing today's students to succeed in tomorrow's workforce through the University of Wisconsin's annual campaign. More at supportuw.org. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
No objection to working with the kind of troops we have here.
Because they're Japs? Oh, no, sir, nothing like that at all.
Now, let's get a couple of things straight, Lieutenant. First, there's not going to be any transfer. You're staying here. Have you got that?
Yes, sir.
Second, they're not Japs. They're Japanese Americans, Nisei. Or as they call themselves, Buddha heads. All kinds of Buddha heads, Lieutenant. From Hawaii, Alaska, California, New York, Colorado, yes, and even some from Texas. They're all American citizens and they're all volunteers. Remember that. And another thing. We officers are referred to as Howleys, not white men. Any questions?
No, sir.
The 1951 movie Gopher Broke detailed the challenges and heroism of World War II's heroic 442nd Regimental Combat Team, comprised of Japanese-American soldiers, many of whom had been placed in wartime internment camps following the bombing of Pearl Harbor. The 442nd would become the most decorated unit of the war. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests on this special Veterans Week edition of Route 51 are 92-year-old Robert Izumi and 91-year-old Robert Yano, two of the surviving members of that fighting force. And if you'd like to speak with them, if you've got a question, call in now at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Gentlemen, the movie title Go for Broke was also the motto of the 442nd. It's a gambling term. Robert Izumi, can you tell me what it all meant?
I'm not too much with the 442nd. I was with them in 1944 until November of 44. So the company I was with, I think I'm the only survivor man left in that. But the gentleman to my left knows more about the 442nd and the 100th Battalion.
All right, Bob, what did Go for Broke mean?
That means you go for broke means go. You give it all you got.
Yeah.
And does that accurately reflect the intensity of how the 442nd fought in combat?
It is. You know, I'll tell you, in basic training, you get that feeling when we went for a 25-mile hike. Now, you don't see no border heads drop out, because if you do, somebody will pick you up and take you. So that's to show the people that are not marching right next to, which is the Caucasians marching on the side. Now they flop out like flies. And we have that pride that says, hey, don't drop out. And you go, you want to drop out. I want to drop out. I'm sure a lot of others do. But they encourage you, or they'll carry you. They'll carry you there. So we don't drop out.
Robert Izumi, you're laughing and nodding your head in agreement. Sounds like you guys were the toughest soldiers around.
Yes, we were. We didn't drop out, like the gentleman
That's
said.
That's right.
And we would pick each other up. In fact, when he went through basic training, I think it's different than when I went to basic, we had a 50-mile force march. And Lieutenant Brown, he fell out after 30 miles because he had something wrong with his boots and he couldn't make it. But the rest of us kept on going. And he said there would be a band waiting for us at the end, but there was a record.
Oh, it was a record player instead?
And we all got mad and we just laid down.
You folks in the 442nd, Bob, got more decorations than any other unit in the war. Must be a source of pride for you.
Yeah, I think so.
And that must have come as a surprise to some people who initially, at least, wondered if Japanese Americans could be good soldiers and could be trusted to fight on our side.
Exactly. I left that up to Mark Clark, because when they took us out and shipped up to France, and then he says, I want them back again for the last push in the Italian campaign. He says, I want them back again. So, you know, he knows what we had.
The 442nd, you were sent to fight the Nazis in Europe. Why weren't you sent to fight Imperial Japan after they bombed Pearl Harbor? Did they not trust you to fight people of your own ancestry?
Well, I think they probably didn't trust us, maybe, but you know, you got to figure there was the MIS, the interpreters. There was quite a few Japanese Americans in MIS too. Probably there was a few thousands.
So there were people.
Yes.
Fighting Japan.
Yes, they're right up there.
Were they looking for people with Japanese language skills?
Well, that's where the interpreter school came. You know, they had it in Camp Shelp. Mm-hmm. They had two different camps. MIS. My brother went MIS. I have an older brother. He went MIS. And they even asked me when I went to Camp Shelby. They called me in and asked me, the officer asked me if I wanted to go MIS. I says, no, sir. I says, I don't speak Japanese, I told him. And he says, he opened up a manila folder. Mm-hmm. And he says, according to our records, you went to Japanese school in Parler, California, which is about five miles from my place,
right.
Which I did go. Not that I wanted to go, but, the parents says you got to go to learn Japanese. So, you see.
So they, you went to school, but you didn't learn anything.
Yeah, I didn't learn anything. But you see how much they know about you? When I told him, I thought, well, this guy, he wouldn't know anything about whether I went to Japanese school. So I told him, no, I didn't go. So he opens it up, and he says, according to our records, you went so many years to Parler Japanese school. I says, yeah, yes, sir. What could I say? I thought I was going to lie about it, but it's the truth. I did go, but you see how much they know about you.
Let's talk about perhaps the greatest action by the 442nd, the rescue of the so-called Lost Battalion. This is a group of Texas soldiers that had gotten separated and surrounded by 8,000 Nazi troops, and they sent just 2,000 Nisei soldiers to rescue them. Bob, the challenges you faced in doing that must have been awesome.
There again, it's that booty head, what he called, you might say. Die hard, Yeah? You had to prove something. So, some of them, K Company, really took a beating, really. They ended up with probably 18 people out of a company.
And how many initially?
Well, it was 200-something in a company.
So you had 200-something, and everybody got killed except for 18.
With only 18? Well, you could just imagine, So we were I was in E Company, so that didn't take that much of a beating. It was different territories, and it was kind of lit on the backup. But some of those really key companies, an I Company, were right up there. So they took a beating.
Robert, were you involved in that action?
No, sir.
No, you weren't. Bob, did you lose any friends, any people you knew during that fight?
Yes, I did. I lost one local right behind me.
Tell me about that.
Well, we were dug up on a hill there, and they start shelling. And, of course, I had a Browning automatic. Well, Browning, you know what a Browning automatic is. That's about a 30-pound gun. It's got a big magazine, about 30 caliber. And you carry 10 around your waist, and then you carry two bandoliers around your neck, and then you have an assistant behind you with you all the time. That's just to back me up with carrying the ammo around his neck beside mm-hmm. his rifle. And it's real a heavy, heavy gun, but it's somebody that wants to shoot you out because you got the firepower. But I was very fortunate.
Tell me about your friend.
The friend that was behind me, the one that was with me, he's okay. But my friend behind me and behind me, him, he got what you call a direct hit, and they picked him up by pieces in a bag. And the guy behind me got one right behind his neck, but I was very lucky. I was lucky. I don't know why, but everybody can't get killed, I guess,
There but for the grace of God.
That's right.
Is a cliche.
You'd be surprised.
Now Daniel Inouye was one of those soldiers. He would later become a U.S. senator from Hawaii.
Yeah.
And he wrote about that action you took trying to rescue the Lost Battalion. And here's a quote from him. He said, "Most of us realized at that point that we were dispensable. If 200 Texans died, it would have been a terrible thing for the division. But if we died, it was no big thing. Even if we were expendable, we realized that this was an opportunity that we were waiting for, to really demonstrate something. It was a very costly mission, but we succeeded. And after that, no one questioned our loyalty and patriotism."
That's right. He was my platoon sergeant.
So you fought beside him?
Yes. Yes.
What was he like? A lot of people remember Daniel Inouye from the Watergate hearings, and he was a very high-profile senator.
He's a good leader. Good leader. I always think he was a good leader. But, as we came out to civilian life, after all, he's a congressman or politician, you might say. So even whenever I see him, I saw him in Reno, 1988. We had a picture together. And these are the things. When I went to get my Congressional Gold Medal in Washington, D.C., my son and my daughter dragged me around trying to get me to the table. Well, you know, he's up here. I'm here, down here in the bottom, you know. So it's not like we're the same, you know what I mean. The caliber again. There again, you feel that, you see.
After it was all over, there was only one soldier singled out at the time for the Congressional Medal of Honor. But as you just mentioned, Bob, they would change that much later for you. 20 of them, I think, were awarded in a ceremony in June of 2000.
I believe there was a total of 22 after everything said and done, I think. So you see, that alone means a lot. They should have been received those Congressional Gold Medal when that happened, but politics or whatever you might say. But after, I think it was President Clinton, reviewed these things, they deserved that medal.
The 442nd was the most decorated unit for its size and length of service in the entire history of the U.S. military. 18,000 men served, earning 9,486 Purple Hearts, 21 Congressional Medals of Honor, and an unprecedented 7 presidential unit citations.
That's right.
You made history.
Thank you. But
Robert Izumi, you fought not only in World War II, you fought in Korea and Vietnam. What was the most harrowing incident that you were in during all of your years in combat? What's the one that really sticks in your mind, the one that maybe you have trouble forgetting at night when you're trying to go to sleep?
The one is Hagenau. We liberated the last concentration camp. And that I'll never forget that. And the second incident was saving a pilot in Vietnam, and I received the Medal of Honor there.
Tell me about that.
Well, fighting in Vietnam, you had to go through three village chiefs before you can pick up any U.S. soldier or whoever is behind the lines. This pilot, I knew where he was, and I went into my commanding officer, and I said, I'd like to send the helicopter in to get this gentleman out. And he says, you got to get the okay from the village. I said, I did, but the village chief said, negative, you can't go in. So, and I told the commanding officer, okay, I'm going back to my CP. So I went back to my CP, and I hit the panic button, and I said, let's go. And I went over the colonel's head, and I got reprimanded.
But you got the soldier out.
I got the soldier out, and I got the Medal of Honor and the Bronze Star of Valor. And what I don't understand is why we fight over there and lose people. And even in the 442nd, I lost all my company men that I don't know who's alive. And it hits me. And I thank this gentleman, what he gave to me. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here. And I would do it all over again for the United States. I am proud to be armed forces for over 60 years, and I'd do it again.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to a special Veterans Week edition of Route 51 with Robert Izumi and Robert Yano, two surviving members of the heroic 442nd Regimental Combat Team of World War II. You can see them both tonight. That's Thursday night in the Edgar High School Auditorium at 6:30 p.m. and tomorrow night, Friday night, in the Center for Civic Engagement on the UW Marathon County Campus in Wausau. That's also at 6:30. Both appearances thanks to a Walk in Their Shoes school history program. We're going to take another short break. Once again, here's the Andrews Sisters with another song for GIs in the 1940s.
Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home.
Support for WPR comes from Glass Nickel Pizza. 19 years of employee and customer-inspired pizzas made from scratch at 8 Wisconsin locations, dedicated to sustainability practices and community support. GlassNickelPizza.com. Support also comes from Cats and Barkers in Wausau, a natural pet food store dedicated to helping family pets live long, healthy, and happy lives. CatsandBarkers.com. That's K-A-T-Z-E-N, Barkers.com.
Terry, hey, remember that time we took Superetto? It was on a news broadcast, coast to coast, and they mentioned a 442.
No kidding!
I'm telling you, there'll be newspaper stories, lots of them.
Let me see that.
I'll read the rest to you. Honestly, Sam, you'd hardly recognize the old homestead. Maybe it looks the same. The barracks, the barbed wire, the MPs. But it isn't the same anymore. Nothing's the same. Because everybody knows what the 442 is doing. And what means most to me is a change in the kids in my class. She teaches in camp school.
I know, first grade.
They were such sad little people. Never laughed, never made a sound. Today, I'm happy to say, I have as noisy a classroom as you'll find in America.
More better now, eh, Kutunk?
Looks that way, Kanaka. Plenty better now.
The 1951 movie Gopher Broke detailed the challenges and heroism of World War II's 442nd Regimental Combat Team, comprised of Japanese-American soldiers, many of whom had been placed in wartime internment camps. The 442nd would become the most decorated unit of the war. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests on this special Veterans Week edition of Route 51, 92-year-old Robert Izumi and 91-year-old Robert Yano, two of the surviving members of that fighting force. And we've got a few minutes left in the show, but if you'd like to speak with them, if you got a question, call us now, right now, at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Well, the letter from home in that clip from the movie, it refers to the Japanese-American children being taught in the internment camps set up during World War II. Bob Yano, how difficult was it for the little kids who were growing up in that kind of an environment?
Well, I think the kids pretty much adjusted to those things because, you know, when you look back at some of the kids that were even 11, 12 years old, and if you ask them, I know even my relatives, I asked them, well, how'd you feel about it? But they all say, well, we were too young, so we don't really remember anything. I think that's true. When they're young, they don't remember all those things.
Many of our listeners realize that this is the second Route 51 show that we've done on the Japanese-American internment camps. We did an earlier show focusing on the subject of barbed wire baseball, played by some of the great ball players in the World War II camps. One of the guests was one of those ball players, Howard Zenimura. Bob Yano, we understand that your son Randy is married to Howard Zenimura's daughter Kathy, and as a matter of fact, both of them are in Studio A looking at us through the window here. Well, Japanese players at the time, Bob, like the players in the old Negro leagues, they weren't allowed to play on Major League Baseball teams in the early part of the 20th century.
Yeah. Well, you know, when it comes to baseball, I'm not too much of a baseball fan, you know, but...
Well, you got to be there. You're married into the family.
But I knew about the history. I do. I understand that, yeah.
And now... You've got Japanese Americans making millions of dollars playing baseball, while Howard Zenimura made next to nothing despite all of his skills and his hard work.
Right.
So today's players really are living on the shoulders of the baseball pioneers of that era, some of whom were in those concentration camps.
That's right. That's correct. I noticed that a lot of them come from Japan. They come to play in the majors here. They get big salary.
How did your families, living normal lives in California back in 1941, react when that executive order 9066 was signed and they were told that they'd have to leave their homes and all their possessions? Robert Izumi?
Well, I think the older folks hurt 100% on that deal. And as a youngster, I didn't feel bad.
But you had to sign a loyalty oath, right?
I didn't sign nothing.
You didn't sign it, but you had to answer yes to questions 27 and 28 on that form. Question 27 asked if you were willing to serve in combat. 28 asked if you would forswear any allegiance to the Emperor of Japan?
I signed it.
And you answered yes to both of those questions. What do you remember when you went into the camps? What is the memory, the one memory that really sticks with you of what they were like?
I don't remember the dust.
Just a lot of dust.
Just a lot of dust in them. And the barracks were all made out of that roofing outfit. And then the dust would come through the floor. I remember my mom and dad making a partition where it wasn't privacy, actually, because you can always hear what's next door to you.
And Bobbiano, families had to give up all their worldly possessions, and it was basically just what they could carry in one or two suitcases.
Well, one person that can carry a footlocker or two suitcases. My brother's.
That's not much.
No, it's not much. But, you know, on a suitcase or a footlocker, that's all you're able to take. But you're able to take, you have to make boxes to take your kitchen utensils, stuff like that. We made those at home before we went. You had to put a barbed wire, a wire around it so it won't break, fall apart. I have those boxes still, some of them, at home. And I take it to show to some people where I speak. I show them what we had to do. You had to list everything that's inside. Inside, you have to put whatever you have inside. And all the boxes are wired so they won't fall apart. And I still have them.
There's a Gopher Broke monument in the Little Tokyo Historic District in Los Angeles. This is a really big black granite monument that's engraved with the names of more than 16,000 Japanese-American men and women who served in World War II. Robert, have you seen it?
Yes, I've seen it, but my my brother's name is not on there, neither is mine. But I guess I'm very happy and honored all the Japanese Americans for what they did.
How important is it to keep your story alive, Bob?
I think it's good. I think that their monuments there, and even the museum or whatever they have there, they have lots and lots of people that go through that just to look and see what did happen.
Now, the two of you have seen a lot of U.S. history, and we've just had some history made this week. I've got to ask you about that. You've seen a lot of American presidents. What do you think of the just-completed presidential campaign and the election of Donald Trump as president? Bob?
Yeah. In my opinion, great. We need a change.
And Robert Izumi?
I have no comment. Article 34 might incriminate me.
Well, reflect on the changes, if you could, that you've seen in American society over the years. The country is a much more racially diverse place now, with many different cultures coming together from around the world. There's been a negative reaction to that from some people. Bob, you've seen a lot during your 90-plus years.
I think we got a big problem here, and I think, because look what's happening. I mean, everything seems to be going through the pots. I'm afraid.
Robert Izumi, you've seen a lot.
Yes, sir.
And your reflection on the changes that you've seen during your lifetime.
Well, the changes will start back a couple of presidents. The president got away with what he did in the Oval Office, and he showed the youngsters of America that he got away with it. So that's the only president that I think I admire is President Nixon. He said, I made a mistake. I'm going to retire.
And what would the two of you like to see in the next 90 years? I know you're not going to be here, but 90 years from now, what would you like America to be like?
Well, I hope that we can come together with everybody that can. Without, you look at what's going on now, everybody seems to be, you know, fighting each other. Everybody's grabbing for each other. I mean, for their own benefits. Even in politics, it's for them. It's not for the other persons. It's for them.
And you'd like to see somehow us get beyond that.
Yes, I'd like to see it come back you know, together again, together, regardless who you are, together.
Thank you both for being with us. It's been a great hour.
Thank you.
We want to thank today's guests, Robert Izumi and Robert Yano, surviving members of the heroic 442nd Regimental Combat Team of World War II. Again, you can see both of them tonight, Thursday night, 6:30 p.m., in the Edgar High School Auditorium, and tomorrow night, Friday night, in the Center for Civic Engagement on the UW Marathon County Campus in Wausau. Both appearances, thanks to a walk in their shoes. I'm Glenn Mobrig of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss, and our production assistant, Eli Frieders. Thanks to Colin Hansen of A Walk in Their Shoes and John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special audio clips and music today from the 1951 movie Gopher Broke, the 1970 movie Patton, and from the Andrew Sisters, Glenn Miller, Benny Goodman, and the Japanese folk song Sakura, Sakura. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.